the victorious Jews from the war of Midian come back with the spoils of war. So it's interesting, the attitude here towards the victors. Usually in every other nation, some people who come back after being victorious, right? So you take them, parade them throughout the town, right? The heroes. What happens with these victorious Jews? They come back with all their spoils. So you know what we tell them? Wait, don't come into the city. You must stay away for 7 days. Just picture it, right? The heroes of the war against Midian are told in Posuk Yutes, Ve'atem chanu michutz lamachane shivas yomim. You big heroes, stay out of the city, out of the tents, for 7 days. Why? Because you have killed people, and people who kill people are in a state of impurity, so no big parades. That's the process. The third day, the seventh day of the 7 days. That's the attitude of Torah towards victory in war. If it's a necessity, it's a necessity, but no big parades. And what happened to the rest of the spoils? Behold, beged. Also, you have to go through a process of purification. It's tomei, it's in a state of tumei. And the Jews kept the laws of Tyro. And what about the metal in Posuk Chovet, the metal in utensils? Aches azoho, vesa kesev, vesa nechoishes, vesa bar. Can we use that? Not yet. Wait. First of all, you have to make sure that it's kosher. How do you make sure that metal utensils are kosher? So there is a rule. Kol dovor asher yovoi boesh. If the normal usage of this utensil is on the fire, like a spit, you hold the meat on the fire. So which is the only way that you can kosher that? By putting it straight on the fire. Ah, but even after the fire, b'mei nido yiskato, it's not enough that it goes into the fire. All it does, once you put it into the fire, it becomes not non-kosher. You know, it takes away the non-kosher food that was absorbed. But you still have to put it into the mikveh. Ach b'mei nido yischato. Why do you have to put it into the mikveh? Even if it's kosher, you have to put it into the mikveh. Why do you have to put it into the mikveh? Because it's a Gentile utensil. And every Gentile utensil that becomes Jewish goes through a process that we might call it a type of conversion. For my Gentile spoon, you are becoming a Jewish spoon. And a Jewish spoon needs conversion. So what is the conversion of the Gentile spoon? Mikveh. This is why you have to put into the mikveh things that you buy from Gentiles. If outside of Eretz Yisrael, you buy in Eretz Yisrael, chutz laretz metal, you have to put it into the mikveh. Okay? What's the idea about it? It doesn't say, because after all, it's kosher. It's new, you just bought it new. Of course it's not. But that's what we learn out from here, that even though you already passed it through the fire and it's 100% kosher, you still have to immerse it in order to make it in a Jewish spoon. What about v'chol asher lo yovoi boesh? What about something that wasn't directly on the fire? Let's say a pot of soup. How do you kosher it? All you have to do, put boiling hot water inside, boil it on top of a fire for a little while, and then you can use it. V'chol asher lo yovoi boesh taviru b'mayim. But after that, you still need mei nido, the waters of the nido, which means the mikveh. So this is what we learn out from here. We learn out from here that Gentile utensils need mikveh. That's the halacha today, right? We do it today too. But it's only a rabbinical law that glass is also the same halacha. But according to the biblical law, all metals need going to the mikveh after you buy them. Asks the Ramban, very strong kasha. The Ramban says like this. He doesn't understand, he says. Is this the first chance that the Torah has to tell me the chidush, the novelty, that the spoils of war have to be taken to the mikveh? It's not the first case at all. Let's go back. When else? When else did the Jews have, or we can assume the Jews had, Gentile utensils? Huh? So first of all,
Oh,
so you say Sichon ve'oig. Sichon ve'oig. Sichon ve'oig, right? A few weeks before, we read about the war about Sichon ve'oig. What happened in the war of Sichon ve'oig? They conquered the cities. Aren't we to assume that in the cities there were utensils? So wasn't it relevant at the time what to do with those utensils? How come it doesn't say there?
Did they take them?
Did they take? Why should we assume not? Why should we assume not? So here, you know, there is a pirush which is called Das Zekeini mi Bali HaToisves. From the Bali HaToisves, they made a commentary on the Chumash, and he says, "Temo lomo lo nitzavu b'melchemes Sichon ve'oig." So he comes up with an answer that it's very, very difficult to accept. It says, Lefishe shar milchomois oyu basode. Because you know where the fight was against Sichon ve'oig. In the sode, in the camp. Veloy hoyu shom klei tashmishe. So therefore, there were no utensils there. A volcan in Midian, we surrounded their cities, we came into their houses, and this is why we found the utensils. I'm shocked at this answer. Because if you turn back to Parshas Chukas, the end of Parshas Chukas, in the description of the war against the two powerful kings, Sichon Melech Amorim and Og Melech Habashan, if you take a look here in chapter Chof Aleph, it says like this.
What Parsha is that?
This is Parshas Chukas. It says like this. Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Hoemoiri. Now, how would you translate Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Hoemoiri? Where? In the camps? In the fields? I mean, it says Vayeshev, it means in the Mokoy Mishime. Where is that? The houses. And you're going to tell me the houses didn't have utensils. Very, very, very difficult. So, therefore, Ramban doesn't even mention this answer. But the Ramban comes up with another answer. And listen to the Ramban's answer. The Ramban's answer is based on a chidush that we find in the Gemara, shocking chidush. Did you ever hear that when the Jews entered Eretz Israel during the war of conquest, if they came into the houses of the Canaanites and they found a piece of katlo de chaziro, a piece of chazir, a piece of ham, they were allowed to eat it? What? I don't know. I don't know. We'll see right away, because we'll see from the different opinions, we'll get an insight into why. This is the statement in the Gemara. When the Jews conquered Eretz Israel, afilu katlo de chaziro, which means a piece of ham was permitted. That's like, what can be more trade than katlo de chaziro? Afilu katlo de chaziro. Okay? Comes out, according to this, says the Ramban, that somehow the conquest of Eretz Israel overweighs the prohibition against katlo de chaziro. Now, if I were to ask you, the war against Sichon Melech Hoemoiri and Og Melech Habashan, was it a war of the conquest of the land of Israel, or was it a war independent of the conquest of the land of Israel? Now, let's see the result. Once we conquered the land of Sichon and Og, what became of that land? It became part of Eretz Israel. Jewish people settled there. 2.5 tribes settled there. So was it part of Eretz Israel? Right. Can we consider it then a war of conquest?
No.
Why not?
For Eretz Israel, right?
It became ours. So the war was a war of conquest. Right. Why don't you define it as a war of conquest? If you see that after we have it, it becomes ours and Jews settle there, why not?
Because it wasn't originally in their plans. They asked for safe passage across the borders.
Fine, but at the end you see that Moshe Rabbeinu accepts their offer, their proposal, and they settle there. And if we ask the question, do Reuven and God, do they live in Israel or do they live outside of Israel? What is there? They are living in Israel. So the Ramban is a very good case, saying that the war against Sichon and Og is a war of conquest. True? Once we go this far, we can go one step further. So when Jews came into Sichon and Og and found a piece of ham, can they eat it?
Right.
Well, following the rule, they can eat it. If they can eat it, what about the utensils that they found?
Use it.
You can use it. You don't have to kosher it. If you don't have to kosher it, then all the laws don't apply. But Midian Where do the Midianites come from? Outside of Eretz Israel. They have nothing to do with Eretz Israel. So therefore, the war against Midian can never be described as a war of conquest. It's a war in order to kill them, not for conquest. So therefore, you don't have the permission of Katla de Hazira. Therefore, could they eat in Midian a piece of Katla de Hazira? No. Can they use the utensils? No. This is why it's the first time when it's relevant. Okay? Now,
is it true that
problem is, yeah?
Is it true that it wasn't part of their plans to conquer Sichon and Og for territory initially?
It's true, but it never meant that that land was not ours. The question was, do we kill Sichon and Og now, or do we wait until we come in and then we come out and kill them? But it always meant to be ours.
But it was never
the other side of the Jordan.
Was it never part of the plan to settle tribes there?
Again?
Was it part of an original plan to settle tribes over there or not?
No. But it was part of Eretz Israel. Not all of Eretz Israel. Israel has to be settled. But it was going to become part of greater Eretz Israel. Right? Now, the Rambam, when he describes this heter of Katlo de Haziro, describes it in the following manner. The Jewish soldiers, when they come in, they are hungry, they can eat anything they want, even Katlo de Hazira. However, says the Rambam, if they are going to take that ham sandwich, put it in their pocket, and take it home, then it becomes treif again. Because the non-kosher part of it never disappeared. You hear the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban? Ramban seems to be saying that while that conquest of Eretz Israel goes on, all the laws of kashrus just disappear for that short time. According to the Rambam, he seems to be saying that it was just the necessity of war. If you are hungry, eat, but of course, don't take it home. True? Now, do you realize that according to the Rambam's opinion, the Ramban's answer falls off and his question comes back? Because the Ramban's answer was what? The reason why the laws of purification of utensils isn't mentioned by Sichon and Og is why? Because it was war of conquest, and in a war of conquest, everything is kosher. But the Rambam says that everything is kosher just means while you are there and you're hungry, you eat it. But if you take a utensil back home, you have to kosher it again. So the question comes back. According to the Rambam, why doesn't the Torah tell you the law of how to make a spoon Jewish, so to speak, by Sichon and Og? Why does the Torah wait for Midian? Okay? And in order to answer it, we have to understand something which is extremely important. What is the concept behind Judaizing a spoon? What is the idea behind it? I mean, we can hear converting, but to convert a spoon, what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is to express the different levels we are in. We are in a level of Kedusha, and therefore everything which belongs to us is part of that Kedusha-centered life. So my spoon does holy things, so of course it needs to rise up to a level of Kedusha. By immersion, it reaches that level. A Gentile lives a life of Chol, of non-Kedusha, so his spoon can only serve non-Kedusha. Now, was that supposed to be the ideal relationship between Jew and Gentile? Was that supposed to be the ideal relationship between Jewish spoons and Gentile spoons? Not at all. Not at all. We know, if we mentioned this in the past, that ideally the Jews should have had assistants, partners, in their objective to serve God. True, we are the Kohanim of the world. Like it says in Vayikra, Atem tiyu li mamleches Kohanim vegoy kodosh. Absolutely true. But Kohanim allow for Levim and allow for Israelim. So we Jews are the Kohanim of the world. Who will be our Levim? Who will be our Israelim? Who will be our assistants? The Goyim, of course. And this is why the Gemara says that the Goyim were given chances to join us. Hashem went around with the Torah to different nations. What happened? The nations asked what's written there and rejected it. But let's speculate for a second. What would have happened had they accepted the offer of God? How would the world look like? I want to know. What, they would have removed the Jews from their place? Never. The Jews are guaranteed from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What would have happened is that those Gentiles who accept the Torah become the Levim to our Kehune. We would have created one team of service to God. They would have joined us. They would be like a pyramid. We would be on top. They would be lower. The other people would be lower. Like you have Koyanim, Levim, and Israeli. The question is, if that would be the case, would then the separation be so clear-cut? There would be no clear-cut separation. When did the separation finalize? When was it established with finality? Jews are Am Levodot. When was the last time the Gentiles were given the chance to rise up to the level of the Jew and join the Jew to serve God? When was the last chance that was given, and when was it lost?
Bilam.
Yes. Bilam, that's the last chance. That's what the Gemara says. Bilam was given equal powers to Moshe Rabbeinu so that he can do what?
To bring the Goyim.
Bring the Goyim. In other words, Bilam has the last chance in this process. Right? But Bilam doesn't use it out. So Bilam says, Am Levodo, the Jews are a separate nation, nobody will join them. So what happens after Bilam? What has been established with finality?
Separation.
We are all alone in the world. The Jew is Am Levodo, we are all alone. Is this the way it's supposed to be? Not at all. It's supposed to be a team that on top you have the Jewish people directing the team. But as it was, it became Jews, gap, Gentiles. That's the way it is. What happened between Milchemes Sichoin and Milchemes Midian? Bilam is there. Therefore, before Bilam, what was the situation? It wasn't finalized yet. If it wasn't finalized yet, can there be a law that you have to Judaize the spoons? Of course not. When does it become a necessity to show clearly we are at a different level and nobody has joined us? We are not being racist by Judaizing spoons. What we are showing is it's your fault. You had the chance. We could have eaten with the same spoons. You don't want it? Okay, now the spoon is in a different level. Am Levodot, we have separated ourselves. So this is the answer to the Ramban's question according to the Rambam. It's true that in Sichon Ve'oig, we took spoils from the Gentiles. The point is that halacha that we have to kasher, that we have to immerse the Gentile utensils in order to make them Jewish, it doesn't fit until after Bilam, until the division is finalized. Okay?
How come other laws of kasher apply before the war against Midian?
The laws of kasher, for sure.
Why do they?
What do you mean? Why yes?
Why should they, according to this one?
Because the laws of kasher has nothing to do. I mean, what about a Jew who doesn't keep kosher is the same law? But here the chidush is the laws of mikveh, right? Why the laws of mikveh now, not before? The laws of kashas is relevant. Okay, let's go on towards the end of this parsha, chapter Lamed Bet. Now this story, the Torah could have told in just a few psukim. It's an interesting story. The Torah could have said it in a few words, and we know the story. The Torah goes into incredible details, on the surface irrelevant details. What is the lesson of this story? The story is that Bnei God u Bnei Ruvain approach Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say, we would like to stay on the eastern side of the Jordan. Right? You are going to the other side of the Jordan. We want to stay on the eastern side of the Jordan. Moshe Rabbeinu, in the beginning, is very angry. At the end, he accepts it, and he said, but with one condition. What is the condition? That you, the male members of the tribe of Gad and Reuben, will come and fight for the other side, for the western side of the Jordan. If you fulfill that, then you can go back, and the eastern side of the Jordan is yours. This is your condition. Okay? How long should such a story take? 3 psukim, 4 psukim, and you have the whole story. Okay? Now, let's go through the details here, because obviously there is some kind of a story, there is some kind of a message in the details. Take a look here. Chapter Lamed Bet. Umikne Rav hoyo livnei Ruvain velivnei God otsum me'oy. Ruvain and God were the richest tribes. For some reason, they were very lucky in their cattle that they had, and they were very, very rich. And they saw Vayiru Eseretz Yazer, Eseretz Gilod, if they saw all the lands in the eastern side of the Jordan, V'inei HaMokoy Mekoy Mikne, it's a perfect place to succeed in business. Vayovoyu Bnei God Bnei Ruvain Vayomru El Moshe V'Elezer HaKoyen, when they say Oido, they came to Moshe V'Elezer HaKoyen, and they say, we'll skip a little bit, Posuk Dalet, Oretz Asher Iko Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael, Eretz Mikne, look, Hashem gave us a land which is good for business. V'lavodecho mikne. That's our profession. V'yomru imotzonu chen beinecho. Yuta nesoretz azoyz lavodecho lachuzo. We want this side. We don't want to go to the western side of the Jordan. We want to stay in the eastern side of the Jordan. Posuk vov. V'yomar Moshe libnei God ibnei Ruvein. What? Acheichem yovoyu lamilchomo v'atem teishvu poim. They are going to go to war. The rest of the Jews are going to go to war and you are going to relax back here. Is that fair? All the Jews fought for your side of the Jordan, right? All the Jews fought for Sichon and Og. But once you got your share, you don't worry about the rest of the Jews? Is that fair? You know what you are causing? You are causing a demoralization of the Jewish people because they feel that the unity is broken down. Because of you, they'll feel that there is no unity. And I want you to know something. What you are doing now is a repetition of an old, old sin. This is exactly what happened when I sent the spies from Kodesh Barnea. What? What did the spies do? They came back and they said, it's a great land, but we are going to lose the war. By staying here, you know what you are saying? What message are you giving to your brothers? We are going to lose the war. So, you know, we'll stay back home and you fight. Right? And he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Posuk Yud, Vaycharaf Hashem Vayom Ahu, Vayishova Lemor, remember the oath of Hashem? Those people who don't want to come to Eretz Israel, im yira noshim oele mimitzrayim b'min esrei sholado, nishbati, I promise that they won't be able to come to Eretz Israel. So therefore, you want the same curse on you? Now, what do they have in common? The Bnei God and Bnei Reuven asking for the eastern side of the Jordan and the Meraglim, what do they have in common?
Lack of belief.
Again?
Emunah on the other side.
They didn't want to come to Eretz Israel. They both reject Eretz Israel. So those are very, very strong words of Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know if you realize. It's a powerful criticism. You are another group of Meraglim. Yeah? That should be okay. That should be the end of the story. Right? No good. I don't agree. I mean, is there any better way of saying, I don't agree with your request, I don't grant your request? Right? He said it now.
Then he does agree with
you. All right. That's the problem. That's the problem. I mean, that sounds like such a strong argument. What do you mean you don't want to stay in Eretz Israel? So, goes on, Posuk Tezayin. Vayikshu elo, so they come over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say to him, Vayoyim, Gidroi soin ibne lemikneinu po. Moshe, listen carefully, Moshe. We are going to build here for our animals, places, v'orim letapenu, and for our children. Vanachnu necholeitz chushim, we'll go to fight. Lifnei bnei Israel. We will go and fight with the rest of the Jews. Don't worry, Moshe Rabbeinu. What are you worried about? That we are going to stay here while our brothers fight? We are not going to do that. We are going to fight. We never meant that we should stay here and not fight for the western side of the Jordan. We are going to fight for the western side of the Jordan. We just want that once the fight is over, we should be able to come back here. That's all. So does that mean that Moshe Rabbeinu misunderstood their claim? Now, even if he did, Moshe could have misunderstood. I mean, he's a human being. But why would the Torah repeat his misunderstanding? I mean, the Torah should have skipped the first part. Do you hear the difficulty here?
They really wanted to stay on the other side.
You mean because they changed their minds now, you mean? Because they don't say that. They say, listen, all we mean is to leave our animals and our families here. And we're going to fight. It never occurred to us that we are not going to fight.
So what's the question? Why did they repeat the argument?
The question is why Moshe Rabbeinu's apparently mistaken counter-argument, why does the Torah quote it if it's based on a misunderstanding?
Do
They're like the rock. Yeah.
Because they are ready to come and fight.
Then he's accusing
us. So why should the accusation of Moshe be quoted when the whole accusation was based on a misunderstanding? That's strange.
An unjust accusation.
Right.
Most
you can say that Moshe Rabbeinu should have asked, what do you mean? Do you mean to say that you are going to fight or not? Why should he accuse them without trying to find out what do they mean first?
He must have been very sure of what he was saying.
You're right. I mean, it's difficult to understand. How can he be sure and then wrong? Right.
Just perhaps to show the merit.
What?
To show the merit of the tribe, where it might have been a natural reaction to be reluctant to go ahead and fight when
But he knew what they were saying, but he knew, like, to give a lesson to the rest, you mean. But he knew what they meant. All right, but let's go on with the story because it gets more complicated, yeah?
Isn't there a point, I believe, with the children of Noah, where they made the same mistake? They said, we're going to find a place for our cattle and then a place for our children. That shows that the Midos was wrong.
All right. That's something that I'm going to point out later on. The order of their priorities. Yeah.
It doesn't also show that they feel that this land is better than the other one?
They say that this land is better. So is there something wrong with that?
Yes, a land of faith.
Fine. But if that is so, let's try to understand the next portion. Because what happens once they clarify to Moshe Rabbeinu, we are ready to fight. Okay, listen carefully. Here they come back with either a counter-argument or a clarification of the first argument. We don't know whether it's a second argument or it's a clarification of the first one. So, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Posuk Chof. So again, this is dialogue number two. Remember, we already had two parts of the Bnei God and Bnei Reuven's conversation and one reaction by Moshe. This is reaction number two. Posuk Chof. Vayoymer aleihem Moshe. Im tasun es hadavar hazeh. Im techotzu lifnei Hashem lamelchamo. If you will go up front in war, and you will continue to fight until they are all beaten. Then you are okay. Strange. Why does he have to repeat everything? They already said, we are going to fight. So Moshe should have said, oh yeah? Fine. No. He repeats everything. If you are going to go up front, and you are going to fight, and you are going to come back, then you are okay. He has to repeat everything. But that's not all, what?
It's like a contract. He's making
he's describing it in order to be established as a contract. But even more than that. What? But even take a look. And if you don't do it, it's a sin against God. Right? What? Well, not at all. You see that Moshe Rabbeinu, once he hears that they are ready to fight, he's 100% in agreement with them. Right, you see that? But wait, let's go on, make it even more difficult. Posuk Chofei. Now, what should you say now, the Bnei God and Bnei Reuven should say now? They already spoke twice. What should I say now? Shouldn't they say to Moshe, oh, you mean you agreed to our terms?
Fine.
End of the story. Listen carefully to their words. Vayoymer bnei Godu bnei Reuven el Moshe. Lemor. Avodecho yasu kasher adoini metzaveh. We will do what you say. I mean, this very thing, very unexact. What do you mean? Who said it? Who proposed fighting on the western side of the Jordan?
They did.
They did. Not Moshe. Moshe just repeated their words. So how come they said, kasher adoini metzaveh? Tapeinu noshenu mikrenu v'chol b'mtenu yushom b'rei agilot. That's what they said. Why are they repeating it? They are saying, you know, Moshe, you are right. What a great idea, Moshe. How did you think of that? Like, you know, yes, we'll do exactly as you said. That is exactly what they said. And Moshe repeated what they said. You hear the problem here? So let me tell you what the Mefarshim say here. Mefarshim say here that here there is no changing of minds here. You see, if you pay attention, what you mentioned, the order in the second argument of Bnei God, Posuk Tezayin, Vayikshu Elov, and they came to him, Vayomru, Gidroi Sonni Belemikne Yapoy, we'll take care of our animals. Ve'orim letapenu, and cities for our children. What's wrong here? The order is wrong. Why? Because the order expresses a scale of value. What's more important for them?
Cattle.
The education of the children or their money?
Money.
That's what they are saying. The order expresses